So the experiment involved people making adjustments in the bass and the treble. And they did it in quarter dB increments. We would basically start the level. We would randomize the starting level, and then they would make this adjustment, repeat it several times so we get a measure of how accurate they are. And we chose these two filters based on 105 hertz is roughly where room gain starts to occur, depending on the room. And then we have the shelving filter, which sort of simulates the directivity of a forward-facing loudspeaker. And we wrote a little piece of software, and we used these knobs made by Griffin, where they have no, they're basically endless knobs, so there's no bias, and there's no indents in them, so you can't basically go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 clicks. You basically never know where the knob is because you randomize the buffer and the starting point. So these are cool devices for doing these types of experiments. And we used two of them so they could do the treble and the bass at the same time. So again, this was done with 11 listeners. 8 of them were trained, 3 of them were untrained. We'd like to have had more, but these were the only ones we could find at the time. I said one bass player because this guy tended to turn the bass up really high. If we brought in a flute player, maybe he would turn the treble up really high. I don't know. So we had 3 different programs, and this is the spectrum, long-term spectrum analysis of those programs. So I just want to show you that these programs have lots of bass, and they're pretty full bandwidth, and they're not that dissimilar. One of them, Steely Dan, has a little more bass than the other two, but that's at like 30 hertz, below 30 hertz. So we did this 27 trials, 3 programs with 9 repeats so we could really get a measure of how accurate and how repeatable they are. So I'll just focus on these. And keep in mind, these untrained listeners, there's only 3 of them, so we can't be too conclusive here. But these are the average treble, bass levels and treble levels for the trained listeners. So on average, they turned up the bass about 4.7 dB, and they turned down the shelving filter and the treble minus 4. And the untrained listeners, you can see they turned the bass up a lot more, and they also turned the treble up more. So right away, this was kind of disturbing that these untrained listeners would crank the bass. Maybe they're future Beats headphone owners. We don't know.
Or it's hard to find a trained bass player.
Yeah.
Were they trained in how to put the headphones on? We discussed earlier that fitment affects bass quality.
Yeah. Yeah, and the bass player maybe had a big head or a small head. I don't know.
That's the lead guitar player.
Yeah. I think we're breaking a lot of rules here.
Yeah.
But you pointed out leakage, but these headphones, the Sennheiser HD800s, are very, very consistent. Probably one of the most consistent phones that I've tested. You test it on listeners, and it's very consistent when you measure at the block now. So I don't know how much leakage really had to do with this. One thing that after we did the experiment, we thought that maybe some of these listeners were simply turning it up because it wasn't loud enough. Yeah. So how much of it is tone, timbre, and how much of it is I just want to hear it louder? So if I were to repeat this, I would probably include a volume adjustment to begin with. And once they are at their preferred volume or level, then I would have them do this and see whether I get more consistent results. I don't know.
What was the sound level that they were experiencing?
So it was adjusted to about 80, sort of an average level, comfortable, about 80 dB weighted.
All of them?
Yeah. Yeah. The other interesting thing, we found that These are the results for trained listeners with the headphones. But we found that when they were listening to loudspeakers, the untrained listeners really cranked the bass, 11 dB. And, of course, they're turning up the treble as well. So there seemed to be an interaction between the playback and how much bass and treble. And it seemed to vary depending. It was mostly isolated to untrained listeners. So there's definitely something going on here with these untrained listeners.
Looked like one of the numbers up there was off.
One of the numbers is off?
I thought so. So I thought the untrained was a minus, but it was a plus on this.
Oh, you're right.
And it was also the same as that other.
Yeah, I'll look at that. Yeah, that one there.
It's also the same as the other one. Loudspeaker was 1.8. I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. I'll have to look at the... Hopefully I got it right in the paper. So here's the results for the individual listeners. And the ones on these large numbers are the untrained listeners. And these lower numbers are people who are more trained. So here's the average preferred bass levels for speakers with the individual listeners. So you can see there's a bit of variation here from listener to listener with this task. And these are the preferred treble levels. So again, there's some variation here among the listeners. And this is for loudspeakers. The next one is for headphones. And these are treble, preferred treble levels for headphones. So you can see the trained listeners, the preferred bass levels tracking fairly well, even though there's some differences among the listeners. And the same is true with the treble, but the untrained listeners tended to crank the bass for the speakers and crank the treble as well compared to the trained listeners. So then the interesting thing is when you look at the delta, so that's the difference between the preferred bass and treble, you can find that there's less of an effect between the headphone and the loudspeaker playback. So it seems as though if you're cranking the bass up 10 dB, but you also crank the treble up, 10 dB or 4 dB, it tends to track well. So the difference between the bass and the treble level tends to track really well across these two conditions. So I don't know if there's anything to that, but it was kind of interesting. So if you look at all the data, what we have here is the preferred target response of the loudspeaker in black, and the blue or magenta is the one for a preferred level for headphones. So there's about a 2 dB difference. And this is the preferred target response of the loudspeaker measured at the eardrum. So you can see there's a bass boost. And what this tells us is that, this idea that you should equalize the speaker to be flat in the room doesn't really sit well with listeners. They want to hear a certain amount of room gain. The other interesting thing, so what we have here is the in-room response of the in-room target from a previous paper. That's the red curve. So that's what people preferred in a previous study where we were looking at room correction. And in this study, the black one is the rebel equalized to the new target. So there's very little difference between those two curves. So it seems from a less scientific standpoint, we were pretty close to what people prefer when you do a more rigorous study. And this curve is basically the predicted in-room response based on anechoic data. So if you look at the previous graph, this block curve is basically the predicted in-room response based on anechoic measurements. And when you put the speaker in the room, you're pretty well hitting that curve, except below about 100 hertz. And you can see in a room, there's a certain amount of room gain. And the anechoic data can't predict that because it doesn't know what type of room it's going in. So it's pretty, but above about 100 hertz, there's really not much need to do anything to the speaker. Just let it do what it's doing, and you really only have to address the low frequency portion. So that's kind of cool. So the in-room response for the speaker that was preferred is not flat, but it has a bass boost of about 6.6 dB and a treble cut of 2.4 dB, which is pretty well nothing. Just leave the speaker alone. The general shape of the in-room approximates the sound power of the speaker, of a well-designed speaker. And below 200 hertz, people they expect to hear a certain amount of room gain, probably because the room gain was accounted for when it was when the recording was made. Okay.
So, question?
Yeah.
If you had repeated that at a 10 dB louder listening level, and again at a 10 dB lower listening level, would you get the same targets?
Maybe not. I don't. It's a good question. That's a study that needs to be done.
How much do you suspect? I don't know what the right term would be, but maybe acclimatization or familiarization plays into the preference. Like, you know, the fact that people have been listening to speakers in rooms that aren't treated, that aren't acoustically perfect, and therefore have uneven response and room gain problems all over the place. They've been patterned to find something that they find like oh, this is what I'm used to. And so when they go into a new environment, they try to find a sound, you know, curve that matches sort of what they're used to, maybe as a bias that's just carried with them that they can't divorce themselves from.
Yeah. It could be a factor, but the fact that these, you know, the trained listeners you would think would sort of converge since through training and experience for doing these tests in a fairly standard room that they would more or less agree. But even in this study, we found that there's a fair amount of variation. And interestingly, Todd Welty was, you know, the guy who wrote all these papers on rooms and bass and how to optimize your subwoofers for the best bass. Well, he turned down the bass among, you know, the lowest among all the listeners. So whenever Todd does an experiment, I say, well, of course you don't like it. It has too much bass. He likes very, you know, 1 or 2 dB of bass boost. That's it. And the average is about, I think it was about 6 dB in a room. So there are individual preferences, I think, in bass. So the next experiment, we were getting tired of doing these very, when we're doing benchmarking of headphones, it's very tedious doing all the substitution of different headphones. And of course, you still have these nuisance variables of the weight and the feel. So we came up with this virtual method where we said, what if we measure these headphones on an ear simulator and then basically simulate them through a single headphone, the replicator headphone, so that the equalization produces the same response as measured on the original headphone. So the idea is you measure a headphone, you measure it at the eardrum using this grass ear simulator, then you design a filter to emulate that, you apply it, and with EQ, and so when you do that, you can listen to basically the target headphone through the simulated phone. And the great advantage is it's very fast, very efficient. You can very quickly switch between different headphones. It's truly double blind. You can actually, once you measure the headphones, you can store them and anyone can listen to them. You don't have to ship headphones around the world. But the problem is that it doesn't include nonlinear distortion. So if the headphone, if you're really pushing it or it has a lot of distortion, you're not including that in the simulation. And then the other thing is you're not simulating fitment leakage issues. So they put on a pair of headphones and you hit a button, you say, here's the Beats, here's the Bose. They're listening to that, the same frequency response.
I got
you.
Yeah. To the calibrated headphone and then adjust the curve.
Yeah, you have to calibrate the simulator phone.
Okay.
And the program was the three things that you identified earlier?
I haven't talked about that yet. But so we tested this, whether this works by using different music programs, played through these virtual headphones compared to the actual physical headphones. Hmm. That's what this is a validation experiment that we did.
Question?
Yeah.
I assume you used the DSP-based EQ?
Yeah.
I'm curious to know, with all this equalization you're doing, was there any compensation done for the variations in phase that would have happened with all those filters being applied, so that people were not only hearing the same spectral response, but they were hearing the same phase response as well.
Yeah, we're making assumptions up to a certain frequency that it's a minimum phase headphone, and that if we're applying equalizations, that we're also including the phase. But we didn't. To answer your question, we didn't really go out and try to match the phase response perfectly. That the real headphone.